this season. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz, who is going to be speaking on the topic of women and tefillin, Rabbi Leibowitz.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Winston, and thank you for arranging this beautiful series of shiurim. When I was just looking this morning at the lineup of speakers, it's kind of amazing just to see the wealth of our yeshiva, to have gedolei Torah like Hagon Rav Shechter Shlita, Rav Sabalovsky Shlita, Rav Stein Shlita, and it's just really a little surprising to find myself in that lineup, but it's really always encouraging to see how many outstanding Talmidei Chachamim we have in our yeshiva, and really also it gives me a little bit of perspective when I look at our Talmidim, our current Talmidim, and you sort of get to imagine who's the next generation Rav Sabalovsky, who's the next generation Rav Shechter, and you see them sort of developing in front of our very eyes, and that's really a tremendous zechus and a tremendous privilege. But for now, I just want to thank all of you for coming and learning with me this morning. I spoke with Rabbi Winston a little bit about the topic for this week's Yarche Kala, and ultimately he decided on tefillin. I did not particularly choose the topic of women and tefillin. That was an assignment that I was given, but be that as it may, I'm more than happy to discuss the topic from a purely halachic perspective. I think that sometimes when these topics come up, they end up being very emotional, because usually it's a reaction to something. Someone did something or said something, or something was done out of the ordinary, and there was some sort of tumult that was created. So it's always nice to have a little sense of Yishev Hadas and to approach a sugya calmly, just purely from a Torah perspective. Now, in order to discuss this sugya properly, I think that there are two separate issues that need to be discussed. First is, generally, the role of women in mitzvah saseh shazman grama is certainly a very important issue, and it's something that comes up all over Shas, the idea that women are pater from mitzvah shazman grama. How many examples are there? How many exceptions are there? And tefillin, it plays a critical role in that general sugya of the patur of women from mitzvah shazman grama. I remember Rabbi Sabalovsky Shlita once commented in a shir that he had asked his talmidim, how many mitzvah shazman grama do you think women are pater from? How many are there? How many examples can you think of mitzvah shazman grama that women are in fact exempt from? And he said, one of the Talmidim right away said, 1,000. And he said, okay, let's start with this. There are 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. So let's start with that. 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. 248 mitzvahs asay. So now, there are about a handful. There are maybe 5-6 mitzvahs asay shazman grama that women are in fact pater from. There are more mitzvahs asay shazman grama, but there are as many exceptions, maybe more exceptions, to the rule than there are the rule itself. But be that as it may, there is such a rule. Where does this rule come from? It's a Mishnah Maseches Kiddushin on Daf Chav Tes Amud Aleph, which I realized afterwards I only really included about half of the Mar Makomos in the Mar Makomos packet, but you'll bear with me. The Mishnah Maseches Kiddushin on Chav Tes Amud Aleph tells us, Kol Mitzvah Seisha Azman Grama Anashim Chayavin V'Nashim Peturos, that all positive time-bound mitzvos men are obligated in and women are exempt from. V'Kol Mitzvah Seisha But any mitzvah that is not time-bound, both men and women are equally obligated in such mitzvah. So the Gemara over there in Kiddushin and Daf Lamed Daled Amud Aleph raises the question, where do we get this idea from? Nashim peturos from mitzvah shazman grama minalan. Where does that come from? Says the Gemara, gomar mi tefillin. The basis of the entire sugya is tefillin. That ma tefillin, nashim peturos, self kamitzei shazman grama, nashim peturos. Just as it's obvious that women are pater from tefillin, so too that is a paradigm to teach us about all other mitzvos asei shazman grama that women are in fact exempt. The Gemara says, well, how do I know that they're pater from tefillin? And the Gemara goes through that we learn tefillin from Talmud Torah. That since women are pater from Talmud Torah, they're pater from tefillin as well. because the Torah links Tefillin and Talmud Torah in the Parshios of Kriya Shema. Asks the Gemara, okay, but why only explore that link, the link between Tefillin and Talmud Torah? You know, in the Parshios of Kriya Shema, the mitzvah of Tefillin is also linked to the mitzvah of Mezuzah, and women are certainly obligated in Mezuzah. So the Gemara explains, no, because in both the first and the second Parshios of Kriya Shema, Tefillin is linked to Talmud Torah. But in Mezuzah, Tefillin is not linked to Mezuzah in the second Parsha of Kriya Shema, only in the first Parsha of Kriya Shema. That leads the Gemara to ask, well, wait a second, why not say that Mezuzah should be linked to Talmud Torah, and women should be exempt from Mezuzah as well? So the Gemara answers, no, because the Pasuk tells us, Lema'an Yirbu Yemechem, that Mezuzah has this skula, for lack of a better word, of arichas yamim. And what, do you think, gavri ba'ichai, nashi lo ba'ichai, that only men are interested in yirbu yamechem, and women are not interested in arichas yamim? Women are equally interested in living longer, and therefore, women are obligated in the mitzvah of mezuzah. So it's very clear in the Gemara that women are exempt from the mitzvah of tefillin and from all mitzvahs aseh shazman graman. Now the Gemara goes on to explore many exceptions to this rule. There are many time-bound positive mitzvahs that women are in fact obligated in. The Gemara identifies matzah is a mitzvah that women are obligated. Sometimes you'll be sitting around the seder and someone will pull out a chart of how big your kazayis of matzah has to be. Like it normally has to fold out several times because people have all sorts of chumras in terms of how big your kezias of matzah has to be, and sometimes you'll have someone sitting at the table saying, if that's what I have to eat, then forget it, I'll just take a little bite. But we have to be mindful of what's a chumra and what's the halacha. The halacha is that everybody, men and women, are obligated to eat a kezias of matzah. Women are obligated to matzah even though it's a time-bound positive mitzvah. Women are nevertheless obligated in matzah because the Gemara has a heck. We're learning in Daf Yomi now. Meseches Pesachim Kol Sheyeshem Bebal Tochel Chametz Yeshem B'Kom Echel Matzah. Whoever is included in the prohibition of eating chametz is also included in the mitzvah of eating matzah. The Gemara identifies Hakel and Simcha, and elsewhere the Gemara identifies Kiddush as mitzvah saseh shazman grama that women are in fact chayiv in. Then there are non-time bound mitzvahs that women are exempt from. Talmud Torah, like we just learned about in the Gemara. Piri v'rivya, when it comes to having children, the mitzvah to have children, women are exempt from the mitzvah of Pru Revu, although maybe included in the mitzvah of Sheves, and for other reasons would be included in Pru Revu. Obviously you can't do it without women, but the mitzvah of Pru Revu, but nevertheless women are technically exempt from that mitzvah. Pidyon HaBen, women are exempt from. So there are lots and lots of exceptions to the rule. Now even to be magdir, to define what exactly is Zman Grama and what's not Zman Grama, so you take an example, the mitzvah of Kiddush Levana, the bracha of Kiddush Levana, to recite Kiddush Levana. So is that Zman Grama or is that not Zman Grama? So there's a fascinating comment. Magen Avraham in Siman Tav Chav Vav and Sivkat Aleph says, well, Birchas HaLevana for sure is a mitzvah Seisha Zman Grama. It only comes, the new moon is only for a certain portion of the month, and only up until a certain time of the month, exactly when that is, and how to do those calculations, consult your local gabbai. But there is only a certain portion of the month during which one is able to be Mevarich on the Levana. So you would imagine, the Magen Avraham says, for sure, it's a mitzvah Seisha Zman Grama, and that's why typically the practice is that women do not do Kiddush Levana. Women, typically, you don't find so many women reciting Kiddush Levana because women are exempt from Kiddush Levana on account of the fact that it's Mitzvah Shazman Grama. However, Rav Shlomo Kluger, in his comments on the bottom of the Shulchan Aruch in the Chachma Shlomo in Arachayim Sim Tav Chavav, says, no, he doesn't think that that's correct. He says, Ulada'ati Zehi Tamua Ma'od Vein Lo Inyan Klal Mitzvah Shazman Grama. He says, what's Kiddush Levana got to do with the Mitzvah Shazman Grama? Well, why wouldn't it be? It seems like a perfect example of Mitzvah Shazman Grama. He says, I'll tell you why not. Deklal zelo nemar rak b'mitzvah deguf ha-mitzvah shaycha tamid. He says, you know when something is a Mitzvah Shazman Grama? When you have a mitzvah that you can perform the action whenever, that it's always available to you to do, b'chal inyan b'chal zman, I could eat matzah today, right? I can physically eat matzah today. It would be a little cold, but I could build a hut outside my house and go sit in the sukkah today. May not be, it's raining also. But I could technically, I could do those mitzvahs anytime I want. And the Torah says, yeah, but you only get credit for it on particular occasions. That's a mitzvah shazman grama, says Rosh Shlomo Kluger. That only when the action, the mitzvah is available, the action of the mitzvah, the ma'aseh mitzvah is available to you whenever, but you're still only, it's only going to count as a mitzvah by when certain times come and certain points in the calendar. That's the definition of a mitzvah shazman grama. In the words of Rav Shlomo Kluger, the mitzvah zu efshar liskayim b'cheshvan kimo b'tishrei v'iyar kimo b'nisan kimo b'tishrei v'iyar kimo b'nisan. You could do the mitzvah of sukkah in cheshvan the same way you do in tishrei. Iyar, you could eat matzah the same way you do in nisan. Vaval b'kein omra ha-torah shabiyam malo l'chayiv mikan ve'elech pater. But the Torah limits it. The Torah says, no, these are the days you're chayiv, after these days you're pater. That is Zman Grama. Zman Grama means the Torah is what limits me, not when the reality limits me. When the reality limits me, when it's simply, it's not there, the mitzvah is not available except for certain times, that is not called Zman Grama. And therefore, Shlomo Kluger says he doesn't understand how we can call Birchas HaLevana Zman Grama. You simply don't have a new moon for the other times of the month. Whenever you have a new moon, so then yes, every single moment that you have a new moon, you have an obligation to fulfill you have the availability of the mitzvah of Kiddush Levana. That's how they explain, perhaps, the idea of the Ramban in Maseches Kiddushin. The Ramban in Maseches Kiddushin has somewhat of a surprising comment when he talks about Mitzvah Sasei She'ein Hazman Grama. He says, you want to know a good example of a positive mitzvah that is not time-bound? Sfiras HaOmer, the Ramban writes. It's such a confusing Ramban. Sfiras HaOmer, you think that's the classic example of a Mitzvah Shazman Grama, so much so that the Chuvas Divrei Malkiel thinks that it must be a typo. It must have said Samachay Ayin with a Shmidjik over there to really signify that it's Seder HaAvoda. And then some printer who thought he knew how to read a Ramban decided to elongate the word and write Sviras HaOmer. I remember years ago, Rav Baruch Simon told us that when we were learning Hilchos Tzitzis one summer, that he had a particular Sefer with him. I already forgot what the Sefer was called, but it was made up of Morena Rav Schechter's notes from Rav Salavetchik Shiurim on Tzitzis. And he said, you can't find this Sefer because Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zichrono Levracha, had gone to every store and confiscated them from every store because it was stolen. It was a stolen notebook that someone had taken and had published of Rav Salavetchik Shiurim. And the way that it's obvious that it was a mistake, that it was not something that that Rav Schechter had approved of, is because if anyone knows Rav Schechter's handwriting, he has somewhat of a curvy handwriting. And a lot of times when he takes his notes, and when he took his notes from Rav Salavetchik Shir, he would add in his own marmakomos in parentheses and write Vidalid Ayin, Vidas Atzmi, that this is my own edition, this is not from what Rav Soloveitchik had said. And whoever had stolen the notes because of Rav Schechter's curvy Dalids thought it said Vitzadi Ayin. So they did the favor to us of spelling it out, that every time they wrote out Vitzarech Iyun, like, what's Tzarech Iyun? It makes perfect sense. Why does it say Vitzarech Iyun every time he has a few more marmakomos? Because the person didn't know. So sometimes when you expand the abbreviations, it doesn't work out exactly. That's what the Divrei Malkiel suggests. But maybe this is the answer for that Ramban. Maybe it's not Mitzvah Shazman Grama if you hold that the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer is triggered by the Karban Omer. There is a machlokas with the Sfiras HaOmer b'zman hazeh d'oraisa or d'rabanan. So if you hold that Sfiras HaOmer b'zman hazeh d'rabanan, which by the way is what we hold Sfiras HaOmer b'zman hazeh is not a mitzvah d'oraisa, because without a Karban Omer to trigger it, there is no mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer on a Doraisa level. It's only Drabanan. Rav Moshe Sturmbach writes in one of his tshuvas that maybe that little paragraph that we say prior to Sfiras HaOmer, Hinni Muchen Mezuman, that's printed in the Siddur, to be Mekayim Mitzvah Shal Sfiras HaOmer, Kamo Shekasev BaTorah, the Sfaratim Lechem, that it says, I'm about to fulfill the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, like it says in the Torah, he says, probably we should change that. Probably we should take that. That's Sheker. We're not about to fulfill the mitzvah as it's written in the Torah. We're not fulfilling a mitzvah d'oraisa. We're only fulfilling a mitzvah d'rabanan. He suggests we should change the wording to kimo shene'emar, because Chazal tell us that whenever you say kimo shene'emar, that just means that it's similar to the pasuk, but not exactly from the pasuk. But be that as it may, so maybe that's the explanation of the Ramban, that maybe Sfiras HaOmer is not based on a day on the calendar, it's based on an event that's happening. And if you take Rav Shlomo Kluger's Geder, his definition of Mitzvei Shazman Grama, it makes perfect sense that something like that would not be Zman Grama. Now, probably the most important machlokas that really plays a role in our lives, in the lives of, certainly in the lives of all Jewish women on a consistent basis when it comes to Mitzvei Shazman Grama, is the machlokas between the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rambam. And that is, should a woman who is volunteering to fulfill a Mitzvei Shazman Grama recite a bracha on Mitzvei Shazman Grama? Most Mitzvei Shazman Grama that women are exempt from, they have the right and are encouraged to volunteer those mitzvos, as in Eino Mitzuva V'Osa. So Rabbeinu Tam writes, it's quoted in Tosfos in a few places, but most prominently probably in Rosh Hashanah Daf Lamed Gimel, that women should in fact recite a bracha when fulfilling the mitzvah when fulfilling a Mitzvei Shazman Grama. What's Rabbeinu Tam's first proof? He says, because the Gemara in Erevin tells us that Michal Bas Shaul wore tefillin. So here tefillin comes up a second time in this discussion of Mitzvei Shazman Grama. And Rabbeinu Tam says something that's interesting. He says, and if she wore tefillin, she probably said a bracha. So it stands to reason that you can say a bracha, that a woman can recite a bracha on a Mitzvei Shazman Grama. He sort of just like makes that connection, that if she wore tefillin, mistama, she said a bracha. His stronger raya, Rabbeinu Tam's other raya, is that the Gemara tells us in a couple of places that Rav Yosef, who was blind, Rav Yosef says, Meikara Amri, I used to say, Man da'amar alacha krabiuda avinna yamatava l'rabanan, delomaf Kidna va'avidna, that he said, I used to believe that if someone were to tell me that blind people are pater from mitzvos, I would make a celebration for them. I would make a party for them. I'd throw a kiddush in shul for them. Post-Koran. I'd throw a kiddush in shul for them for suggesting that I'm pater from mitzvos. Because look, even though I'm pater from mitzvos, I'm doing them anyway. So clearly, you see that I'm an even better Jew than I have to be. But then, once he learned the idea that gadol ha-mitzuva v'yose, yoser mimi she'ena mitzvah, that it's better to be commanded in a mitzvah than to not be commanded in a mitzvah. You get greater schar. So now he says, I would reverse it. Anyone who told me that I'm chayiv in mitzvahs, I would make a yamatov al rabbanan. Says Rabbeinu Tam, let's go to Rav Yosef's Hava Amina. You know, sometimes you have to learn the Hava Amina of great Talmidei Chachamim. That's where Rav Chaim Velazhner learns the Gemara Masechah Sukkah. The Gemara tells us, based on the pasuk va'alahu lo yibol, that even its leaves should not wither. So the Gemara says that mikan, that you have to learn even sichas chulin shel tamidei chachamim tzrichen limud. So Chaim Velazhner says, I don't understand the concept. Sichas chulin shel tamidei chachamim? Tamidei chachamim are always talking and learning. There's no such thing as sichas chulin of tamidei chachamim. Where do you have sichas chulin? He couldn't imagine. He couldn't imagine such a concept. A sichas chulin of tamidei chachamim. So he said, what is sichas chulin of tamidei chachamim? It means a hava amina, that a talmid chacham is discussing a matter of halacha or lamdus, and he has a hava amina. And then he changes his mind in the end. So what? The Hava Amina was a waste of time? It's legendary that Rav Soloveitchik Zichrono Livracha would say shir for, 3 hours straight, and then the next day he'd come in and he would say, I was thinking about it again. Everything I said yesterday was wrong. The whole thing was wrong. So what? So it was 3 hours of Bittul Torah yesterday? All of it was, and he would rebuild the whole thing, the integrity of doing that. And just the, nowadays, like if I'm saying shir, someone raises their hand and asks a question, and I realize that everything's wrong, it's a good kasha. Okay, let's go back to it. But you know, the integrity of saying that the whole thing was wrong. So what? It was a waste of time? No, you see the thought process. You see the way that he thinks, that there must have been something there. Now, granted, the maskana, it may not be correct, but there's what to learn even from the Hava Amina. So says Tosfos, Rav Yosef had a Hava Amina, that it's better to be an Eino Mitzuva V'Yosa, that if someone were to tell him that a blind person is pater from mitzvos, and he's doing these mitzvos anyway, that's greater than being chayiv in mitzvos. Asks Rabbeinu Tam, if someone who's exempt from mitzvos is not allowed to recite a bracha on the mitzvah, shouldn't Rav Yosef be upset by that? Shouldn't the loss be greater than the benefit? Meaning, he's saying he'd be so excited because you'd benefit by volunteering a mitzvah rather than by being obligated in the mitzvah. But whatever you're benefiting by volunteering the mitzvah rather than being obligated, you're losing in the bracha. Brachos are very important. Kala brachos kula. The Gemara tells us that Hayman debayle mevi chasida lekayem mili debrachos. Person wants to be a genuine chasid, he should fulfill mili debrachos. It's important to recite brachos. Therefore, says Rabbeinu Tam, it must be that even in his hava amina, when he thought he was exempt, he was still reciting brachos, because people who are exempt from a mitzvah still recite a bracha on a mitzvah. That is the shita of Rabbeinu Tam. The question begs itself, how could you say the words Asher Kiddushanu B'Mitzvosav Vitzivanu? You're not allowed to say something that is sheker. One is not allowed to utter something that is false from his mouth. You know, that's Rav Asher Weiss has a beautiful piece actually in I think his Sefer on the Moadim, in his in a piece on Hanukkah, where he describes that sometimes we actually alter the way we do a mitzvah or modify the way we do a mitzvah in order to make it conform to the text of the bracha that we say. Because we cannot say something that is sheker, and therefore, for example, the Rush writes in Maseches Pesachim that there is no mitzvah of achilas kezayis of maror. That maror is something that's on a daraisa level. Maror is something that you eat together with the Karban Pesach. It's a condiment for the Karban Pesach. There's no actual mitzvah, independent mitzvah of achilas maror. That's why maror bizman hazeh is only drabanan. There's no independent mitzvah of maror. Says the Rush, why are we makbetir a kezayis of maror, which we are? We're makbetir a kezayis of maror. That's why I eat lettuce and not horseradish. That's one of the reasons I eat lettuce and not horseradish, also because you're supposed to. But why is it that we're makbet to eat kezayis of maror? He says, because we have a bracha al achilas maror. So how can you say achilas is always defined as a kezayis? You can't say the words al achilas maror and then do something that's not called an achila. We have to be careful that the words that we say are actually true. So the Rishonim are bothered. You want to tell me, Rabbeinu Tam, that women are allowed to recite a bracha on mitzvos that they're exempt from, or that a blind man, if he's exempt from mitzvos, would be allowed to recite a bracha on those mitzvos that are exempt from? How do you say the words Asher Kiddushanu B'Mitzvosav Vitzivanu? Vitzivanu means that we are commanded. So this is a question that the Rishonim already dealt with in a great length. There's actually a Tshuvas HaRashba. You know, you'd expect that if you had the opportunity to ask shailas to the Rashba. Rav Asher Weiss often talks about how some of the shailas that we're faced with nowadays in medical science and in many other areas, you feel like we need the Rashba to answer such shailas. Like we simply are ill-equipped to answer such shailas. So you'd imagine if you had the Rashba, you would ask him, like, you know, some very, very serious questions. There's a Tshuvas HaRashba, Chelek Al, where someone says, hey, do women say a bracha mitzvah shas van grama? You know, when a woman sits in sukkah, it takes a little, does she say a bracha? And the Rashba's answer is very brief. It's like a one-liner. He says, this is an old discussion. You know, like there's a lot on this topic already. Rishonim have debated this topic. He says, if you're asking my opinion, I think stama de milsa is that they do recite a bracha. But how? How do you say the words vitzivanu? It's not true. So the Ran in Maseches Kiddushin deals with this in a very straightforward manner. The Ran asks, V'chitema, heich mevarchus v'tzivanu v'lon nitztavu? How could you say v'tzivanu when they're not in fact commanded? So the Ran says what sounds like two separate ideas that combine together to explain why you can say v'tzivanu. Ika lemeimar dekivan da'anoshim nitztavu v'inu nami shaychi b'mitzvah shari notos ala eschar shaper mitzuyin lemeimar v'tzivanu. That since women men are commanded, and women also get rewarded for the mitzvah. So when you put those two things together, the fact that men are commanded in the mitzvah, and women are also included somewhat in the mitzvah, that they get rewarded for the mitzvah, that's why you could say vitzivanim. It's very difficult. Rav Elchanan Wasserman in his Kovitz Shiurim HaMaseches Kiddushin Os Kuf Mem Beis says he doesn't understand how these two factors, the idea that men are commanded and the idea that women can also do the mitzvah, have anything to... How does that address the question of how a woman can say the word vitzivanu? He says, I don't understand. Einu muvan, says Rav Elchanan Wasserman, Hashem Yom Kodamo. Eze tam yesh bazeh sheh... Anashim nitztavu sheyicholus lomar v'tzivanu. Just because men are commanded, women could say v'tzivanu. V'atam hasheni gamkein tzarechin. Dinihi shemakablo schar keinu mitzuviyosu mikol makom harelo nitztavu ve'ichicholus lomar v'tzivanu. I agree, says Rav Elchanan. Of course, women get credit as neinu mitzuva v'yosef for doing a mitzvah. But what does it have to do with Vitzivanu? Vitzivanu means that one is commanded in the mitzvah. So very difficult to understand exactly what the Ran is driving at. I think the more generally accepted approach is that, and as to what the Ran means, is that Vitzivanu is more global. That Vitzivanu is not about, and this the Balei Tosfos referred to pretty explicitly, that Vitzivanu is not about I have a personal commandment to do this. Vitzivanu is we, as Klal Yisrael, have a personal commandment to do this. And that's what the Ran is, not a personal, I have a general commandment to do this. And that's what the Ran is probably driving at. That since there is such a mitzvah, of course, doesn't mean good deed. That's one of the worst translations into English that you'll ever find when people translate mitzvah into good deed. The word mitzvah comes from a shorish. It's tzav, it's a tzivui. It's a command. A mitzvah is a command, right? We are obligated to do many, many things. But since there is this mitzvah in Klal Yisrael, and I also connect to the mitzvah, so it's fair to say Vitzivanu more globally about Klal Yisrael. That is Shitas Rabbeinu Tam. The Rambam, on the other hand, disagrees. The Rambam says in a couple of places, in the third parak of Hilchos Tzitzis, the Rambam writes, women are pater from the mitzvah of tzitzis, but he says, if nashim sharatu lis atef b'tzitzis misatfim below bracha, that if a woman were to choose to wear tzitzis, she may do so, but without a bracha. One may not recite a bracha. And the same in Hilchos Sukkah, the Rambam writes that a woman does not recite a bracha of leishiv b'sukkah. So the Rambam shita is probably because of the word vitzivanu. There are other explanations as well, but probably because of the word vitzivanu, a woman is not permitted to recite a bracha. How do we paskin la halacha? So it's a machlokas, as you would expect, between Svardim and Ashkenazim. The Mechaber paskins in a number of places in Shulchan Aruch, Simen Yud Zayin in Hilchos Tzitzis, and Simen Tav Kuf Pei Tes, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that women do not recite a bracha mitzvah shasman grama, whereas the Rama in each place tells us, yes, they do, that women do recite a bracha mitzvah shasman grama, because we paskin like the Balei HaTosfos. That's what you have all over the place in Shulchan Aruch. There are those who broke party lines on this issue, meaning there are Ashkenazi rabbis who were more nota toward the Sephardic psak halacha on this issue, and the reverse. There were a couple of Sephardic rabbis that were nota toward the Ashkenazi side. Most notably on each side is the Chida in Yosef Ometz, Simon Pei Beis, says that he thinks if the Mechaber would have seen the Shalos Uchuvas Min HaShemayim in Simon Aleph, where the Shalos Uchuvas Min HaShemayim says that women are permitted to say a bracha mitzvah, say Shazman Grama, then the Mechaber would have changed his mind. Maran Beit Yosef, he would not have paskened like the Rambam if he would have seen the Shalos Uchuvas Min HaShemayim. Difficult to understand why one would make that assumption. Rav Avadya Yosef has a beautiful tshuva on the very notion of Shalos Uchuvas Min HaShemayim. The tshuva is not really about that, but he has a whole subsection of a tshuva about Shalos Uchuvas. Shalos Uchuvas Min HaShemayim was written by one of the Balei HaTosfos. He went to sleep at night, and instead of dreaming about whatever it was that he did that day, he had dreams where he would go and ask questions in Yeshiva Shalmaila. He would ask questions in learning, and they would give him answers, and when he woke up, he would write down the answers. So all of his answers were taken straight from Shemayim, and thus the name Shalos Uchuvos Min HaShemayim. So Rav Avadya has a discussion: is that more authoritative than Shalos Uchuvos anybody else, any of the Gedolei Achronim, because that came straight from the source? Is it less authoritative? Is it equally authoritative? So Rav Avadya suggests that Torah is Lo B'Shemayim, he, as the Chumash tells us, and therefore it's equally authoritative. Meaning, if it makes sense, it makes sense. If it doesn't make sense, it doesn't make sense. I mean, you put it through the same type of questioning that you would have to put any piece of Torah through, to analyze and be critical and to try to make sure that you understand properly, and if it's incorrect, so you would reject it. In fact, Rav Avadya himself, in many, many places in his writings, is very upset that Sephardic women started reciting brachos on many mitzvah shasman grama. He says it's totally incorrect. They're learning from their Ashkenazi neighbors. It's a terrible Ashkenazi influence on the Sephardim. They shouldn't do this. It's against our tradition. Now, on the flip side, the Yeshuas Yaakov quotes that the Chacham Tzvi The Shus Yaakov and Simon Yud Zayin in Hilchas Tzitzis quotes that the Chacham Tzvi used to discourage women from reciting brachos on mitzvah shazman grama. That the Chacham Tzvi was more nota to the svarvik side of things. So that's just a little bit about mitzvah shazman grama in general. All that tells us is that women are pater from mitzvah shazman grama, and tefillin is the prime example of that because tefillin is the very source for the patur of mitzvah shazman grama. But based on everything we said up until this point, it would seem that just like women volunteer shofar, and just like women volunteer lulav, and women volunteer sukkah, so a woman is allowed to volunteer any other mitzvah shazman grama, the other two or three that they happen to be exempt from. So where does the idea come from that women dafka refrain from doing this great mitzvah of tefillin? So before we discuss this, just two quick points. Point number one is that this is the kind of thing where the conclusion is probably clear before we even begin the discussion, because we do not really find among Gedolei Torah that have a serious discussion about this topic nor God-fearing Shomrei Torah Umitzvos women who seriously put on tefillin in a prominent way since the days of Michal Bashaul. So Miyamei HaNeviim, we don't find examples of this. So to suggest that we're going to introduce something without direct guidance from Gedolei Torah on something that hasn't been heard about since Yamei HaNeviim would be absolutely shocking. It would be stunning to suggest something like that. So the conclusion is not really as in question as one might think, but it's worth going through the sugya, seeing what the sources tell us. And the other thing is what I mentioned before. A lot of times when we have this discussion, we're all worked up and we get all excited, and therefore sometimes that ruins an argument in one direction or the other, because people are either so motivated by a sense of kanaus, by a sense of feeling a need to argue about something, or people are motivated by whatever other motivations they have, that people sometimes tend to exaggerate. And exaggerations aren't really helpful when you're trying to arrive at what is in fact true, at what is in fact the Ratzon Hashem and what the Halacha guides us towards. So let's take a look at the sugya. The sugya starts with, I think this is in the Mar Makomos, a Gemara Maseches Erev in Daf Tzadi Vav Amud Aleph. The Gemara tells us, Michal Bas Kushi, Haysa Menachas Tefillin Velo Michu Ba Chachamim, that Michal Bas Kushi used to wear tefillin. Michal Bas Kushi is of course Michal Bas Shaul. Shaul was called a Kushi because he was Mishuna. Anyone that's referred to as a Kushi in Tanakh, Chazal always darshan that they were different, that they stood out, because as you would imagine, an Ethiopian person in white Europe would stand out, would look different than those around them. So if someone was unusually tall, we'd call them a Kushi. If someone was unusually an unusual tzaddik or tzaddikas, like Tzipora was an Isha Kushis, so she's called an Isha Kushis because she stands out. That's the way Chazal generally understand it. So anyway, so Michal Bas Kushi used to put on tefillin, and the Chacham had no objection to that. The Gemara goes on to tell us, Ishto Shal Yona Yisa Olu L'Regel, the wife of Yona used to do Aliyah L'Regel, V'lo Michu Ba Chacham, and the Chacham made no such objections. However, it's important to point out that Tosos on the spot of Maseches Erevin quotes an alternate girsa of the Psikta Rabasi that tells it, and it's in the Yerushalmi this way, that in fact, Michu Ba Chachamim, that the Chachamim did, you just change one little word. It's not lo michubach, it's michubach hacham. That one little word makes all the difference in the world, right? You know, is it lo or is it not lo? Is it yes? So that could make a significant difference. That's a question when it comes to correcting someone who's laning, right? So someone's reading from the Torah. So when you correct a person who's reading from the Torah, you always have to be careful, because on the one hand, there's an issue to embarrass somebody publicly. So you have to be careful about the dignity of the person, that you're not embarrassing them unnecessarily. But on the other hand, if they're getting something very, very wrong, so there are different shitos in Rishonim. So some Rishonim say that the Rambam holds, for example, any minor mistake, the way of Soloveitchik quoted from his grandfather, even in Trupp, that any minor mistake, even in a Trupp, you'd have to correct. That would be very difficult in many, many shuls to correct, even on Trupp. Rov Rishonim saying, this is where we paskin, is that only if it changes the meaning of the word. If it doesn't change the meaning, then it's not worth correcting, but if it changes the meaning, if the mispronunciation or the mistake changes the meaning, then it's worth correcting. Of course, you need to know something then in order to correct. You need to know when it does change. A mapike changes the meaning of a word also. So you need to know what does and what does not. Sometimes a mila el, mila ra, will change the meaning of a word. A person needs to know in order to be able to correct. So probably best not left to the peanut gallery, right? Probably best left to a couple of people who know exactly how to, are familiar with the klalim of diktuk and will be able to correct properly. But then there's a sheet in Rishonim that's quoted by the Beis Yosef, that only if the person is mecharif umegadef, that only if what the person says is not just incorrect, but instead of, for example, saying Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, they read the Dalit as a Resh, Hashem Acher. Oh, that needs correction, right? That you can't let go. If someone says Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Acher, but short of that, you would not correct. So you think, like, you know, it says Lo Tirzach, right? If someone were to say Tirzach, you know, the word Lo makes a huge difference over here. So Lo Michuba Chachamim or Michuba Chachamim, a huge difference. Which Girsa is correct? Our Gemara says the Chacham did not have a problem with it, and the Yerushalmi says the Chachamim did have a problem with it. If you look in the Perish of the Sefer Charedim on the Yerushalmi, though, it may not be as big a difference as we think, because the Sefer Charedim writes, Kol Hecha Detana Velo Michu Isura Ika, that even when we have a lashon of lo michu, not everything that the chachamim do not put up a fight about means is something that the chacham necessarily agree about. Meaning, not everything that a rabbi is there and doesn't yell about is necessarily an indication that he thinks that it's correct, that he thinks that it's proper. Lo michu, says the Sefer Charedim, based on the Gemara in the fourth parak of Maseches Pesachim, lo michu means that it was wrong, but lo michu, they didn't feel that it was worth shouting about. They didn't feel that it was worth making a macha'a, making an objection about. So that's the only time that we have. You know, there are there is a belief out there, for whatever reason, that Rashi's daughters were tefillin. If anyone knows any Mar Makomos that actually suggests that that's true, I'd be very grateful. I've never been able to find anything. We do know that they were educated. They knew how to read and write, which was a great chiddush for the times of the Rishonim, that women were educated and would even help Rashi write his commentary, or whatever. That itself is a great chiddush for the times of the Rishonim. But I don't know of any indication that they wore tefillin. So I think from the times of the Navi, the last example that we have with good authority of a woman in Jewish history, a God fearing woman in Jewish history who was Shomer Torah Mitzvos and wore tefillin, was Michal Bas Shaul. So now, why not though? Meaning we just went through the sugya. Women are supposed to volunteer mitzvah shazman grama. Okay, machlokas, whether you say a bracha or don't say a bracha. But why not? So if you look through the poskim, one can find 9 reasons that are suggested by poskim as to why women would not volunteer to do the mitzvah of tefillin. Now, sometimes you hear 9 reasons to something, that must mean none of them are very good, right? You wouldn't need 9 reasons if you had a single good reason. In this case, really the first reason is the only reason that's necessary, and it's the one that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, so you don't really need much more than the very first reason. And the other reasons are just sort of add-ons and additional factors to be educated about. Meaning, sometimes you do have, like Rav Asher Weiss has a beautiful piece on Tsar Bali Chaim, that the Gemara tells Tsar Bali Chaim is Daraisa. Oh yeah? Where in the Torah does it say Tsar Bali Chaim? So he has, I forgot the number, something like 11 places in the Torah, 11 Shittos in Rishonim. It's more than 11. Okay, Rabbi Berman tells me more than 11. So it's so many, many examples, 15, I don't know, places in the Torah where Tsar Bali Chaim is alluded to. And he says, at the end of the day, none of them are really that great, but the point is that clearly the Torah is trying to tell us something. That there's a sense of Ratzon HaTorah, that HaKadosh Baruch, and that itself is a Mechayev Midoraisa. When you get a clear sense from the totality of Torah that something is true. In this case, I think you don't really need, it's not 9 reasons because none of them are so good. No, the first reason is the real reason, and then we'll go through the other 8 as well. What is the reason? There is a Gemara Masechta Shabbos Daf Mem Tes that tells us that tefillin tzrichin guf naki ke'alisha bal kanafayim. That in order to put on tefillin, one has to maintain a guf naki. One has to have a clean body like alisha bal kanafayim. Not just regular hygiene, but beyond that, to the level of this person, alisha bal kanafayim, who is extremely careful about his tefillin. The Gemara tells the story about alisha bal kanafayim, that even when there were gezeros hashmad, that Jews were not allowed to wear tefillin, he wore his tefillin anyway, and when he was caught by the officers, by the government officials, they started chasing him, and he started running away, and he ran down an alley, and he quickly grabbed his tefillin off his head, and he was holding them in his hand, and they said to him, Maza Biyadcha, what is that in your hand? And he didn't know what to say, so he said, Kanfeyona, what's in my hand are Kanfeyona. So he said, oh yeah, let's see, and he opened it up, and a bird flew away, a yona flew away, a miracle happened to him, because he was so careful about tefillin, so a miracle happened that he was saved with regard to to the mitzvah of tefillin. I don't know, I would be kind of upset, like he's got to buy a new pair of tefillin now, like where's he going to get his tefillin are gone now. So Mistama, he ordered a new pair of tefillin. So that's the Elisha Bal Kanafayim, someone who's so careful, keeps such a guf naki for the sake of tefillin, should wear tefillin, otherwise one does not wear tefillin. Tosos of Maseches Erevin says, V'nir lefarish, the time l'man d'yam d'olavi rishos, mishum de tefillin tzrichim guf naki, v'nash, amens rizal sizari, says, this is exactly the reason that women do not wear tefillin, because since tefillin is such a high stakes game, it's one thing to volunteer a mitzvah when you are not obligated in a mitzvah, when there's no downside in volunteering a mitzvah. But when volunteering the mitzvah comes with a significant downside, a person's not going to be able to keep a guf naki, and that's going to be a bizayon to the tefillin, that's going to denigrate the tefillin, so then one would not volunteer such a mitzvah, and that's what the Beis Yosef writes in the name of the Kolbo. Kosva Kolbo, says Beis Yosef in Simon Lamed Ches, Kosva Kolbo b'shem Aram, Shem Ratzva Anashim L'Niach Tfilin, Ain't Shomalan. That if women would want to wear tefillin, ain't Shomalan. Neshein Yodos Lishmaratzman Binikios. Because keeping a guf naki is impossible for women. It's a biological reality of keeping a guf naki simply being impossible for women. And therefore, in Shulchan Aruch, we paskin in Simulam Chesiv Gimel, Nashim Vavadim Peturim Tefillin, Neshumit Seshazman Grama, that women are certainly pater from tefillin because it's a time bound positive mitzvah. And the Ramah adds, Ve'im Hanashim Rotzos. And if women want to be machmir and they want to wear tefillin, mochen biyadam. We make an objection. We cannot allow such a thing. And the Bir Agra explains, the Vilna Gaon explains, because nashim are not able to be careful about guf naki, and therefore they don't wear tefillin. Ah, you might ask, well, wait a second, are we so confident that men know how to keep a guf naki? That even though it may be a biological reality that men and women are different as far as guf naki, but maybe men aren't so great at keeping guf naki either. So the Aruch HaShulchan in Simen Lamed Ches, Vav, says, Ein Achinami, that's exactly right. I believe yesterday Rav Stein gave a shiur about wearing tefillin all day. And guess what? The overwhelming minhag ha'olam is that we do not wear tefillin all day, even though that's really the mitzvah. The mitzvah is we're supposed to wear it all day. Why do we not wear it all day? Because we're unable to maintain a guf naki, and therefore we do it as bare minimally as possible. So when we're saying Kriya Shema, when we're davening, when we're most confident, that we're most on guard and focused, that's when we wear tefillin. But other than that, we don't risk it. So men minimize the amount of time that they wear tefillin as well. Moreinu Agon Rav Shachter Shlita writes in the Sefer Mipnei Arav, in the first edition, it's on page 22, in the edition with all the Yiddish in it. I don't have the second edition where he fixed that. But in the first edition, he writes, Umehai Taima, Einon Manichin, Lo L'Nashim, Lo L'Avadim, Lo L'Ketanim, Lo Niach Tefillin Klal. That's why children don't wear tefillin either. Even though, why not? If a child is old enough to understand the mitzvah, be mechanichim in the mitzvah. Why not have a child wear tefillin when he's 9 years old? He could do everything else, so why can't he wear tefillin? Because even for men, we minimize, even for adult men, we minimize, we're metzamtzem as much as possible how much we wear tefillin. Now, the question on this was raised by an achron called the Tehila LeDavid. The Tehila LeDavid in Simen Lamed Ches says, well, wait a second. You want to tell me that women cannot keep a guf naki and that's why they're discouraged from wearing tefillin? He says, but nowadays that men, even men only wear tefillin for davening anyway. Why not have women wear tefillin? Because probably they could keep a guf naki long enough to daven, to just focus. And he says, and if you're going to tell me that women cannot keep a guf naki for davening either, then how do we allow them to daven? meaning if you think that they can't keep Gufnaki for even as long as it takes to daven, how do we allow Birch's Kriyashma and Tefillah? So how do we allow keeping Gufnaki even in such a case? So how do we allow women to even daven? So there is a that's the kasha of Tila David. Rabbi Aaron Feldman, who's Rashiva of Yeshivas Neri Yisrael in Baltimore, wrote a book in English called From the Eye of the Storm, or something like that. It has like a subline. It has, I forgot what it's it's full title. Something like a calm take on hot button issues. It's not the calmest take on hot button issues. It's a take on hot button issues. We'll put it that way. But in that sefer, he has an important comment, I think, on this Tehillah LeDavid. He says, first of all, it's important to note that the Tehillah LeDavid never says that we should change the minhag. He just says as a kasha. He says, why is it that that the Rama paskins that we should make a macha? So it's a kasha on the Rama. Second of all, he says the kasha is not really such a great kasha, meaning his kasha is, why is it any different than tefillah? No one objects to women davening. Of course women can daven, but if you can't keep a gufnaki, isn't that a problem for davening? And the answer is very simple. When one does not keep a gufnaki in tefillin, it's actually mechalel the tefillin to some degree. Whereas by tefillah, it doesn't do anything to a chefza shel kedusha. It's just that it's inappropriate to be davening without a gufnaki, but to be mechalel Chefetz Shel Kedusha is an entirely different level. It's an entirely different madrega. It actually has an impact on the Kedushas HaTfilin. I'm reminded a little bit, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein once gave a beautiful, I guess it was a shmuz around Yom Noraim time, a sicha around the time of Yom Noraim, where he spoke about the concept of Hesach Hadas. That we have a concept of Hesach Hadas with Tefillin, we have a concept of Hesach Hadas with Kodshim, and we have a concept of being Masiach Das from the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That sometimes people just aren't focused on Hashem. And the idea the Gemara talks about, we just did not that long ago in Daf Yomi, is that there's a machlokes of Yochanan Reish Lakish, if a person has a Hesach Hadas from Kodshim, if they're not guarding Kodshim properly. So what's the problem with that? Is it simply that because the person was Mesiach Das from the Kadshim, it could be that the Kadshim became Tameh when you weren't looking? It's a risk of Tuma? Or is it that no, Hesach Hadas itself is a psul? Hesach Hadas, lack of focus, means that it loses some of its Kedusha. That you're robbing it of its Kedusha by not focusing on it. Kedusha is generated by our focus on that Kedusha. And Rav Lichtenstein suggested that the same is true with a Hesach Hadas from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Person is Mesiach Das from the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's not just that he's losing out because he's not connecting to Hashem. We are the vehicles through which Hashem, you know, Hashem's Kedusha appears in this world. And if there's one less vehicle through which that's going to appear, that means that we're minimizing the presence of Hashem in this world. It's like a psul aguf. It's not just a chashash. Something might happen to it. But anyway, so there's this concept of Hesach Hadas from Tefillin, and there's a concept of Gufnaki in Tefillin, because it's Mechalel, the actual Kedusha of Tefillin. But that is reason number one, and that is why we're very minimalist in the way that we do the mitzvah. So I see that Rabbi Lopatin asked a question, Lemaisa, oh, it was private, I'm sorry, should I not... I don't think it's such a... I could say it publicly. The Maisa men do wear tefillin beyond the minimum, beyond Duval Tzion, even sometimes to learn a little after Shacharis. Right, meaning even then, we're somewhat minimalist, because even when we are keeping our tefillin beyond the minimal amount of time, it's still only while we're actively engaged in Kedusha. We don't... But the real mitzvah is even when we're doing business, even if a person is a carpenter, when he's building his tables and his chairs, he should still be wearing tefillin the whole time. So exactly where we draw the line and what's worth it and what's not worth it, so that's up for debate. So it's more than the bare minimum. But if one is Einu Mitzuva, meaning that's where at least he's Mitzuva, so he has to wear tefillin each and every day, so you may be willing to err on the side of caution, less so on the side of caution. But if you're Einu Mitzuva, then certainly caution is warranted, and that's what the Rama writes. That's why Mochen Biyadam, according to the Rama. We have to quickly run through some of the other explanations of the Achronim. In the Shilta Giborim in Maseches Rosh Hashanah Daf Tesam Beis Midap HaYarif, he writes, Asur l'nashim laniach tefillin afilu b'lo bracha, that women may not wear tefillin even without a bracha, m'nei shenira k'derech hachitzonim, sh'ovim al divrei chacham, v'enim rotzum lidrosh ha'makroz k'mosan, that it seems that to be a derech hachitzonim, in violating the divrei chachamim and not being willing to darshan the psukim the way the chacham darshan, meaning, very often, tefillin, the Shilta Gibarim is suggesting, if a woman decides that she wants to wear tefillin, what she's really suggesting is that she feels she should be obligated in tefillin. And yet Chazal tell us that they are not obligated in tefillin. So to make that suggestion against what Chazal say is derech hachitzonim. The Keren Ora in his comments in Masech Zeriv and says, lo yadati zu minayin lo. He says, I don't know where he gets the idea that it's derech, why is it different than volunteering any other mitzvah shazman gram? They're not saying that they're being different than what the Chachamim suggested. They're just trying to volunteer a mitzvah. So it's a little bit of a different, difficult shilta giborim to understand. Yet at the same time, the idea of derech hachitzonim in the modern day and age may be a little more resonant, because most often when a woman is wearing tefillin, it's usually a symbol of other strains of Judaism, of non-Orthodox Judaism. So whether when an Orthodox woman were to do it, it would to most contemporary people, it would appear as if she's behaving in the manner of other strains of Judaism. So even though the Shilta Gibarim certainly didn't mean that, but it certainly resonates somewhat in a modern context as well. A third potential suggestion, Rav Yosef Engel writes in Gilyonei HaShas in Erevin Daf Tzadi Vav Amud Aleph, that since it says in Tefillin, since it's the Chazal tell us about Tefillin, that when the Pasuk says Kishem Hashem Nikra Alecha, that's a reference to Tefillin Shel Rosh, that it represents the Shem Hashem, and the Pasuk says Lo Sisa Shem Hashem Alekecha Leshav. One has to be very cautious in how we utilize the Shem Hashem. So therefore, those who are not obligated to wear Tefillin have to realize that this is something that's that involves the Shem Hashem and would be akin to a bracha levatala. It's an interesting drasha, but that's what Rav Yosef Engel suggests in the name of the Maharal in Gur Aryeh. He said, if that were the case, though, the Chara would only apply to Tefillin Shabrosh. Ki Shem Hashem Nikra Lecha, the Gemara tells him in some brachas, is Eilu Tefillin Shabrosh. It would not apply to Tefillin Shalyat. A fourth suggestion, also an interesting suggestion, says the Tshuvas Shvus Yaakov, Chelek Beis Simen Yod Aleph. He says, you know, the Gemara tells us Michal Bas Shaul wore tefillin and the Chum didn't have a problem, and Rashi and Tosus have a difficult time understanding why would they have a problem? It's a mitzvah shazman grama. So says the Shvus Yaakov, Ulfiza Yesh Lomar, Daha Kamash Malan, He says a fascinating idea that it's a questionable idea, but a fascinating idea, that there is a halacha that an avel on Yom Rishon, the first day of Avelus, one does not wear tefillin. Even on the second day of Avelus, when there are panim chadashos, you don't wear tefillin. You should put on tefillin before people come into the house. But on the first day of Avelus, which is Yom Kvura, the avel does not wear tefillin. So it's a day of great crying and one where he cannot calm himself down, and tefillin are incompatible with significant crying. And he says, you ever see a woman daven from the depth of her heart? Women are dim'asun metzuya. They daven much better than men daven, and they daven with a certain sense of tearfulness and a sense of emotion that maybe would get so carried away that it might be deemed inappropriate for tefillin. I'm reminded of the story that someone said that there was it was Yom Noraim time, and there was an old Jew davening in a shul in Manhattan, and he was just carrying on and crying and weeping the entire time, and someone came over to him and said, after davening, he said, are you okay, sir? Is everything okay? We must be going through something. And he said, you know, where I come from in Europe, if you weren't crying and carrying on during davening of Yom Noraim, people would ask, are you okay? Is everything okay? You know, I see the difference in America, that if you are crying during Yom Noraim, people ask if you're okay. But anyway, that's the suggestion of the Shvus Yaakov. It's a bit of a difficult suggestion, because we do not find that there is an issue to cry in the tefillin. We find that there's an avil biyom rishon does not wear tefillin. Then you have a fifth suggestion, and that is the Targum Yonasan ben Uzil. Targum Yonasan ben Uzil and Dvarim Perichav Beis Pasuk Hay, and the Pasuk Lo Yek Le Gever Alisha. So Lo Yek Le Gever Alisha, a woman shouldn't dress like a man. Says the Targum Yonasan, Lo Yek Gulion De Tzitzis Tefillin De Inan Tikune Gever Al Itza. That which are men, mitzvos that are worn by men, women should not do. And it gives the example of tefillin and tzitzis, and therefore they are objectively considered to be klei gever. Rav Moshe has a tshuva in Or HaChaim Chelek Dalet Siman Mem Tes where he says, but tzitzis you could adjust. Meaning tzitzis you could make a more feminine garment and then it won't be klei gever. Tefillin cannot be adjusted. You're not allowed to change the color. You're not allowed to change the shape. Tefillin are what they are. So every set of tefillin is going to look exactly the same. And therefore, there's no way to make it no longer klei gever. And then you have a sixth approach. The Kaf HaChaim in Siman Lamed Ches Siv Katan Ches and Tes. And this is one that I do not understand. The Kaf HaChaim says, Al Pi Kabbalah. It's very bad. That Al Pi Kabbalah, it was Davka Michal Ba'ashol, Sheyoda Ba'atzma, Shaisala Neshama Me'alma D'Dekura. That she knew that her neshama was a masculine neshama. I don't know what that means, but that Michal Bashal was different. She had a masculine neshama, and she was allowed to wear tefillin, but Al Pi Kabbalah, apparently there's some issue with it. Then there's a seventh potential reason, and that is just the practicality, that if a woman is married and wants to wear tefillin, you can't have a chatzitza between your tefillin shel rosh, according to most Rishonim, between your tefillin shel rosh and your head, and this is an issue where people who wear toupees, whatever it's a halachic discussion at least, whether it's a problem of a chatzitza. So if a woman is going to be wearing a head covering, so to put the tefillin on is going to be very, very challenging when it comes to maneuvering, just a practical issue, maneuvering around a head covering. And then there's an eighth issue. The Gemara Maseches Yevamos Daf Yud Gimel and Beis tells us that the pasuk of Lo Tisgodedu doesn't only mean that one is not allowed to cut themselves in mourning, but it also means Shlo Tasu Agudos Agudos, that we shouldn't have different people following different practices within a particular tzibur. And there is room to argue that if some people within a particular tzibur were to decide to practice Judaism in a very different kind of way, that that would be a violation of Lo Tisgodedu. That requires further limud, but not when we have 6 minutes left to the shir. And then the ninth possible reason, the final possible reason, the Rama writes in Hilchos Tzitzis in Siman Yud Zayin Sif Beis, that even though women are permitted to wear tzitzis, the Rama writes, Ach mechsi ki yuhara, v'lachein ein lahen lilbosh tzitzis. That it is a violation of yuhara. What's yuhara? Yuhara is when a person acts in a way when they are religiously arrogant, when they act in a way that shows that they're trying to stand out, they're trying to be different beyond what normal people are who are observant of the religion would do. And they're being too showy, too demonstrative about the religion. So that's mechsi ki yuhara. I remember once I have a Talmud who was learning in the old city in Yerushalayim, and he noticed that everybody was wearing tefillin all day, and for sure at Mincha people were wearing tefillin. So he came home from yeshiva, and his parents asked him what he wants for his birthday, and he said, I would like a second pair of tefillin so that it'll be easier to maneuver all day, you know, when I'm wearing tefillin all day longer, at least at Mincha. And his parents like said, what are you talking about? Who wears tefillin all day? We never heard of this. You know, his parents said, you know, they were familiar with two Gedolei Torah, Rav Soloveitchik and the Lubavitcher Rebbe. They said, I don't think either of them wears tefillin at Mincha. Like, what are you talking about? So he said, no, you know, Rav Nevensal wears tefillin at Mincha, you know, so I feel like I should also, because, you know, it makes sense, right? If Rav Nevensal does, so should a 19-year-old kid. So he told his parents he wants his tefillin. So his mother went on Wayu Torah, and she went on a shir by Rav Shechter, any random shir on Bava Metzia or something, and she clicked on Ask the Speaker, and she wrote a shaila to Rav Shechter. My crazy son wants to put on tefillin at Mincha. What's the story? So Rav Shechter sent her, faxed her the next day, this was many years ago, faxed her a tshuva in return, where he told the Maisa about how in the Volozhiner Yeshiva, the Netziv only allowed one bachar who he felt was a kadosh v'tahar to wear tefillin at Mincha, to wear tefillin all day. No one else was allowed to. There was only one bachar who was mamish a kadosh v'tahar that was allowed to. That was Rav Kook. No one else was permitted. No one else was granted permission to do so. So Rav Shechter wrote, I remember the lashon was, there is a concept called mechsi ki yuhara. This isn't mechsi ki yuhara. This is yuhara mamish. This is the very definition. This is textbook yuhara, to act in such a way. That's the fellow, I think ultimately he moved back to the old city of Yerushalayim and he does wear something, but at that point in his life, he didn't take it on at that point in his life. So anyway, just to quickly summarize what we did today. We discussed the concept of Mitzvei Shazman Grama in general, what the sources are that women are exempt from Mitzvei Shazman Grama, a number of the exceptions, the basic machlokas between the Rambam and Rabbeinu Tam whether women recite a bracha on a mitzvah shazman grama. We also help to be magdir, to define what a mitzvah shazman grama is, that great chiddush of Rosh Shlomo Kluger, that it's got to be a mitzvah that's always available, yet the halacha limits the time of the mitzvah, and therefore excluding kiddush levana and possibly svira sa'omer. And then we went through why it is that women traditionally do not volunteer the mitzvah of tefillin. After all, they do volunteer other mitzvahs. So we said one thing is clear, the Ramah says that mochen bi'adam, that we are supposed to object if a woman wants to wear tefillin, that is not something that should pass without objection. And we discussed 9 possible reasons why. Well, one real reason and then 8 other snifim. But the primary reason being that in general we are minimalist in our approach toward tefillin in particular. Tzitzis may be different, because tzitzis does not require a gufnaki. And that's where Moshe writes in a tshuva that but for the concern of yuhara and the concern of klei gever, a woman can wear tzitzis, provided that she does so privately, so you don't have an issue of yuhara, and she wears a different kind of a beged. And I think in general, if I could just make one comment, that most often, or always, I would say, when we approach matters of halacha, when we approach matters of shmiras Torah mitzvos, it's important to approach all such discussions with a sense of Ratzon Hashem. You know, one of the questions that Talmidim ask most often when they have question-answer sessions with their Rebbeim, or when they have an opportunity to discuss it, what does the Torah say about feminism? Something like that. You know, that's one of the questions that always makes the list. And I don't think it's controversial at all to say, the Torah doesn't say anything about feminism, neither for nor against. It's simply not a Torah value. Meaning the Torah values are shmiras ha-mitzvos, fulfillment of the Ratzon Hashem, doing what the Ribbon Shalom wants. So if I say that my daughter and her friends who are having a meal together should make a mezuman, does that make me a feminist, or does that make me want to be machmir for all the shittos in Rishonim, since there's a machlokas in Rishonim, whether it's a Roshos or a Chiv, but no one holds a tzasir? I don't think that's, it's not driven by any other agenda other than fulfilling Torah mitzvos, wanting to serve Hashem. So some things may sound more feminist, some things that the Torah says may sound non-feminist, but that's not the gauge through which we measure the value of methods of Avodas Hashem. The bottom line is we should all continue to strive to do our best to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam properly as we try to grow each and every day, as I mentioned before, in our yeshiva under the leadership of our great Gedolei Torah, and I do not want to take up any more time. I already gave my commercial for YU earlier at the beginning of this year, so I'll leave it now to Rabbi Penner. Thank you all very much for coming to learn this morning.
Oh, thank you, Rabbi.